The House will come to order. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Here.
Berger.
Here.
Blake.
Here.
Blickery.
Here.
Bonner.
Here.
Botten.
Here.
Brechtel.
Here.
Brown. Brown. Burkhart.
Here.
Bird.
Here.
Campbell.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Childers.
Here.
Connolly. Kraft.
Here.
Davison.
Here.
Edmonds.
Here.
Eklund. Esquivel. Freeman.
Here.
Gay. Gay excused. Gingery.
Here.
Goggles. Goggles.
Here.
Greer.
Here.
Green.
Here.
Harshman.
Here.
Harvey.
Here.
Hunt.
Here.
Illaway.
Here.
Yagi.
Here.
Kasparik.
Here.
Croker.
Here.
Crone.
Here.
Lockhart.
Here.
Laux.
Here.
Lubno.
Here.
Madden.
Here.
McKim.
Here.
McComey. Miller excused. Moniz.
Here.
Nicholas.
Here.
Patton.
Here.
Peasley.
Here.
Pedersen.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Petroff.
Here.
Korberg.
Here.
Roscoe.
Here.
Simlick.
Here.
Shepperson.
Here.
Stewart.
Here.
Stubson.
Here.
Teeters.
Here.
Throne.
Here.
Ronish.
Here.
Wallace.
Here.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Here.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Here.
Mr. Speaker.
Here.
Brown.
Excused.
Brown excused. 57 present, 3 excused.
Please stand and join me in the morning prayer with Reverend Patrick Bradley.
Let us pray. Blessed are you, Lord God of all creation, whose goodness fills our hearts with joy. Blessed are you who brought us together this day to work in harmony and peace. Strengthen us with your grace and wisdom, for you are God forever and ever. May God strengthen you and bring your work to completion. May hope accompany your journey through the days to come. May God's abiding presence be with you all the days of your life. And may Almighty God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Hi. Well, narrowed it to 2. We're going to have another meeting. We're going to have another interview.
I wish you well. The college is important.
It is. Thank you.
And thanks for your help.
We are at that order of business journal committee report.
Mr. Speaker, your journal committee reports that the journal of February 3rd, 2011 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed, Representative Freeman, Representative Kasparik.
Messages from the Senate.
Message 200. Mr. Speaker, the Senate adopted the Committee of the Whole report, failing the bills listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 125, Health Care Facilities Crisis Management, Ayes 15, Noes 15. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. Message 202, Committee of the Whole, motion to reconsider passed. Mr. Speaker, during the Committee of the Whole, the Senate passed the motion to reconsider the vote, failing the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 125, Healthcare Facilities Crisis Management, Ayes 16, Noes 14. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Representative Davison.
Good morning, members of the 61st. It is with great pride this morning that I get to introduce some people that are very special to me. You'll notice the page today is going to be Michaela Stevenson, my granddaughter. She's been here, this is her sixth or seventh year, and she's been our page every time. In the back is the doctor for the day, my son-in-law, Fred Baldwin, the nurse for the day, my daughter, Perry. And Christopher is our special guest, Christopher Burgess, hopefully soon to be Christopher Baldwin. And in the back, we have a special guest that has worked very hard to help me through my campaign and very interested in the process, Jaden Zaragoza. And he is very interested in the process, so anybody that's got some good advice that would help him not stand. Okay, would you please welcome them? Thank you.
That new one for
Mr. Speaker,
Representative Moniz.
Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
If I could, Mr. Speaker, Representative Roscoe and I are going to team up on this one. But if you'd look up on our north balcony, we have the Wyoming State 4-H leaders group here visiting us today, and if I could, I'm going to introduce them. Lander Doyle from Worland, Rebel Roderkus from Star Valley, Paula Andre from Gillette, Mandy Morgan from Gillette, Shaylee Little from Sheridan, and then I have I proudly introduced my daughter-in-law, Lindsay Moniz, up there as one of their escorts. Another guest is Janet Bierman, if she would stand up. And then we're going to let Representative Roscoe gang up on the advisors and the Piedmont representative.
Yeah, I would like to introduce the third or the last 4-H member, Jenny Bierman from Pinedale, and Advisor Robin Schamber, also from the county number 23. We are 23 on your license plate. We hope we're not 23 in your hearts. But great, thank you for making the trip down.
Representative Pedersen.
Mr. Speaker, may I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Brothers and sisters of the 61st, it is very rare when we get someone to come all the way to the Capitol from Cheyenne. And I'd like to introduce one of our very special constituents in this state up in the South Gallery. It's Madeline Bamer and her and her dad, Steve.
We're at that order of business. Senate files, or do we have anybody else? No, come on up. Chairman Berger, sorry I missed you.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to get everybody used to the fact that there will be people coming from Bighorn over the next week, because I haven't had anyone here. But I'd just like to introduce my friend Chuck Custis from Bighorn, Wyoming. He's been coming down to the Capitol for a lot of years, and he's been a fine educator, and it's just nice to have someone from the neighborhood. So welcome, Chuck.
Representative Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to introduce two members of our community, the director of the Jackson Hole Community Foundation, Catherine Conover, and Mickey Babcock, who is behind the Equipoise Fund and very supportive of the Wyoming Women's Foundation and other women's issues.
Now, Representative Harvey.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Up in this gallery behind us, we have our new state auditor, Cynthia Cloud, who has been participating in our Leap into Leadership program this week and hosted breakfast for all the ladies this morning. Would you please welcome her?
We are at that order of business. Senate files on first reading. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 137.
Senate file.
Or Senate 137. Thank you.
Introduced by Senator Perkins.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the operation of motor vehicles.
Senate file 137 is referred to committee number one, Judiciary. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate file 138.
Senate file 138, introduced by Senator Perkins.
First reading of
an act relating to parental rights, child custody orders, abandonment.
Senate file 138 is referred to committee number one, Judiciary. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate file 91.
Senate file 91, introduced by Senator Hicks.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to wildlife, livestock disease research.
Senate file 91 is referred to committee number two, Appropriations. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate file 106.
Senate file 106, introduced by School Finance.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to school finance.
Senate file 106 is referred to committee number two, Appropriations. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate file 117.
Senate file 117, introduced by Senator Bebout.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the University of Wyoming Reclamation and Restoration Center.
Senate file 117 is referred to committee number two, Appropriations. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate file 85.
Senate file 85, introduced by Senator Burns.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to game and fish violations and penalties.
Senate file 85 is referred to committee number six, Travel. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate file 119.
Senate file 119, introduced by Senator Johnson.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to real estate brokers and salesmen.
Senate File 119 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 93.
Senate File 93, introduced by Senator Martin.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to dietetics licensure.
And Senate File 93 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, Social Services. We are at that order of business, reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 259, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blickery, Camel, Childers, Goggles, Madden, Peterson, Semlek, Vronish, no, Miller, signed, Representative Childers, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Tribal Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 28, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Botten, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, McKim, McComey, Petroff, Shepperson, signed, Representative McComey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Tribal Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 31, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Botten, Davison, Yagi, McKim, McComey, Petroff, Shepperson, no, Connolly, signed, Representative McComey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Tribal Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 32, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Botten, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, McKim, McComey, Petroff, Shepperson, signed, Representative McComey, Chairman.
We're at that order of business, bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 7.
House Bill 7, introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to veterinary medical practice.
Chairman Simlek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 7. Members of the House, yesterday when we put on that 3-page standing committee amendment that took the kind of the nexus between the state veterinary's state veterinarian and the veterinary board by removing the state vet as the secretary treasurer, one of the things that we did not contemplate happening in that exchange was that in section K of the standing committee amendment, we didn't leave anybody in there to be able to sign the requisitions of the board when expenses have occurred. So what we have suggested in this amendment is that we will add the language, a person designated by the board. So all expenses of the board and all expenses incurred in connection with the administration of this act shall be paid from the account by requisition signed by a person designated by the board. I would ask for your favorable consideration of this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Anyone else for their first time on second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 7? First time, second time? All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 7, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 7 has been adopted. House Bill 7 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 39.
House Bill 39, introduced by the Labor Committee, an act relating to health litigation fund.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I bring before you second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 39, and I would ask for your favorable consideration. To me, this is a cleanup amendment. The purpose of this bill, as I understand it, is to provide funding for any litigation we may engage in relating to the not just to the Federal Health Care Act, but also related regulations that may be promulgated. And looking at page 2, lines 5 and 6 of the bill, my purpose is really not to change the intent of this phrase at all, but as written, it says funds in this account shall be used for expenses related to litigation concerning health care reform. That, is, in my opinion, is pretty open-ended. I think you could argue it could cover travel expenses for folks going to seminars on the Health Care Act, unrelated to any actual litigation. So the purpose of the first change that you see on the proposed amendment is to say that the funds have to be used for litigation. And I think it's certainly broad enough to allow the folks implementing this to address any litigation expenses they might have. The second proposed change is really not substantive either, in my opinion. If you turn to page 3, I'm simply proposing deleting the reference to litigation alleging the federal government has violated or will violate various fundamental rights. I think that same concept is covered in Romanet 3 right above it. Litigation covering fundamental rights is extremely broad. For example, the right to privacy that some folks in this body have concerns about is a fundamental right that comes out of the 14th Amendment. So this is very broad language related to healthcare litigation, and I think we need to keep the bill focused on what I understand its intent to be, which is to challenge various aspects of federal healthcare reform as it's implemented. And I would stand for questions.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would urge the body to resist this amendment and vote no. This is to allow the governor some latitude to write such a narrow focus. I think would be make this very difficult for the governor to accomplish what he needs to accomplish. In particularly, how it's written now, it's expenses related to. This would allow for sort of what his game plan is that he's going to hire some folks that will also serve as somewhat mentors to already existing assistant AGs so that we can have the expertise within our own Attorney General's office. This could possibly limit that. I would ask you to give the latitude to the governor that he's requesting and to vote no on this amendment.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I as well urge you to resist the second reading amendment. Ladies and gentlemen, we had some really good testimony in Appropriations Committee on this bill, and it was revealed to us that we really do lack a clear, coordinated, integrated approach to reacting to the ACA. And in fact, we have, as you can see with several of the bills coming before us, a very fragmented approach to this. And we just do not know how all of these things are going to interact for our state. Now, and we also heard some very good testimony that we lack expertise in the governor's office, in the AG's office, that we can formulate a clear, integrated, coordinated plan. And in my mind, this paragraph that's being attempted to be changed takes off the table our state to really get the expertise needed to do some good work for our state. Again, urge your no vote.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I, too, would urge a no vote on this amendment. Here's the emails that I got yesterday. I don't know if you can see how thick they are. These are just some of the new regulations coming out. Very, very thick. And I think that we need the latitude to fight them at the beginning, at the end, rather than how about let's go and spend some of this not just on suing them after the rules have been promulgated, but how about if we develop the expertise and send our attorneys to go and fight the things that don't fit for Wyoming at the beginning end of the thing, not wait until we're in litigation, but to develop the expertise and then to work on those things that don't fit for Wyoming at the beginning. So I would strongly urge a no vote.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment. Folks, we
heard the testimony in appropriations, gave it an appropriate haircut from $2 million to $500,000, and really which is in line with our other litigation accounts. And, you know, the beauty of a part-time legislature, I mean, we all support that, but one of the drawbacks is we're out of town most of the year, and this is a way for us to set policy. We won't be able to come back if something should change, and let's give our chief executive a little bit of flexibility. So, against the amendment. Thank you.
First time, second time, prior to sponsor. Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I didn't want to interrupt the good chairman of labor, but just a point of order. We can't hold up stacks of emails on the floor. And I don't have anything to add. This was actually helpful. The breadth of that language concerned me, and that's the reason I brought the amendment. We are writing sort of a blank check, frankly, for whoever participates in this effort on behalf of the state, and I think we just need to be aware of that. Thank you.
All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 39, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 39 has failed. We are on second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 39, Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring before you second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 39 and would ask for your favorable consideration. Essentially, we will be back again at the beginning of next year, or in February of next year. $500,000 is certainly better than the original appropriation, but I still do not see the justification for that much money. We're already in the national litigation. The rules will be coming out. Appealing rules is not that expensive of a process. It generally doesn't require a lot of discovery. And again, this just seems like a lot of money to throw at the Attorney General's office at this stage of the game. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment. If we do the investments up front and be proactive, assessing and understanding our position, it's going to save us lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of money at the other end. As you know, our Medicaid budget this year is $1.1 billion, and half of that is federal funds, $550 million, I'm sorry. The sheer magnitude of the numbers requires us to have assets available and necessary to resist these regulations at the beginning or to be proactive in the promulgation of the regulations. The expertise in these areas doesn't come cheap, and giving our state executive officer the flexibility he needs to accomplish what we've directed him to do is important, and so I'd urge you to resist this amendment.
Representative Pedersen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to ever so gently push back on this amendment and tell the committee a little bit about what was originally done with the 500 from the 2 million. As to the reason why and keeping it in, I think that the majority floor leader spoke of the need for this and what the costs are going to be and why that is. The other reason is this isn't a number that's just a number that was spoken at 500. This is a number that's equal to various other funds that we have for federal litigation. I don't know if you can, not sure if you can mention the funds, but one has to do with natural resources, one has to do with water, as comparisons of other $500,000 investments on this, by the state. I'd also remind you that if this does turn out to be currently more, our argument was that it may end up being far more than this original $500,000, but we'll be back in 6 months, and we can take a look at the increasing cost of possible litigation at that time. But our thought was that if this is too much, you can see that on page 5, line 20, you begin with the reversion language, that everything will end up coming back for any unexpended funds at that time. So I'd like you to resist this amendment.
Anyone else for their first time, second time, prior to sponsor, Representative Throne?
I think, again, just the body needs to recognize that I can't think of another time when we have given such an open-ended litigation fund. The natural resource accounts, the water accounts, they're all fairly limited. They're prescribed. This is open-ended to challenge every conceivable period, semicolon, and is, as, and the in federal health care regulations. And it's a lot of money to spend on litigation. And before any of my clients let me do litigation, they make me do a budget of projected expenses. And this is completely open-ended. And as long as we're all clear on that's what we want to do, then let's do it. But this is throwing money at something in ways that we typically do not do as a body. Thank you.
Thank you. All those in favor of second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 39, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 39 has failed. House Bill 39 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 135.
House Bill 135, introduced by Representative Greer, an act relating to state lands improvements.
House Bill 135 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 144.
House Bill 144, introduced by Representative Kraft, an act relating to public funds regarding school district bonds.
House Bill 144 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 151.
House Bill 151, introduced by Representative Semlich, an act relating to State Loan and Investment Board. Regarding hydropower development.
Chairman Simlek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 151. This deals with the proposal that we had to include the loan capabilities from the State Land Investment Board for hydropower development. I would note that 2 of the sections in this area of loans within the water development account and with the land processing facilities, there was ability within each of those sections to provide for rulemaking, and it was the request of the State Land Office that we would also provide rulemaking authority within this new section that we created in House Bill 151. So we just add in there simply provided by rules and regulations. I would ask for your favorable consideration. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
First time, second time. All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 151, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 151 has been adopted. House Bill 151 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 161.
House Bill 161, introduced by Representative Ellaway, an act relating to education regarding interstate compact on students of military families.
House Bill 161 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 174.
House Bill 174, introduced by Representative McComey, an act relating to designated transfer of state lands.
House Bill 174 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 190.
House Bill 190, introduced by Representative Dave Zwanitzer, an act relating to electronic fine submittal.
House Bill 190 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 193.
House Bill 193, introduced by Representative Childers, an act relating to nursing care facility assessment.
House Bill 193 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 202.
House Bill 202, introduced by Representative Brown, an act relating to railroad fence repairs.
House Bill 202 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 203.
House Bill 203, introduced by Representative Lubnow, an act relating to domestic relations regarding child support orders.
House Bill 203 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 206.
House Bill 206, introduced by Representative Throne, an act relating to the Wyoming Emergency Response Act.
House Bill 206 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 209.
House Bill 209, introduced by Representative Green, an act relating to public health and safety regarding emergency medical review organizations.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Labor Committee is pretty responsive to suggestions here on the floor, and therefore this amendment, if you go to page 2, line 3, right after osteopathic, we're going to insert emergency medical, and that puts them under organization, and then it deletes them from line 5, which puts them under society. So that now it's part of an organization and not part of the society. I urge your I vote. And did I move that? Excuse me. I move I move House Bill.
Second reading.
Second reading amendment to House Bill 209 and request your favorable consideration.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the bringers of this bill bringing this amendment. This is the topic I was discussing yesterday. I think we all agreed with the intent of the bill. I just thought the placement of emergency medical was in the wrong place, and I appreciate that they went back and did the second reading amendment, and I would urge you to vote aye.
Anyone else for the first time, second time? All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 209, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 209 has been adopted. House Bill 209 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 211.
House Bill 211 introduced by Representative Throne, an act relating to county memorial hospitals regarding board removals.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We had a little bit of this discussion yesterday, Representative Brown actually was going to bring this, and he actually had to be at another meeting, so I agreed to bring this for him. Here's the issue of removing someone off of a memorial hospital board. Again, these are people that are appointed to the board. They're not elected. This isn't, you know, with the hospital district, you elect them. And that's a totally different procedure for getting rid of elected folks. These are people that are being appointed by the Board of County Commissioners. How this is worded right now, the only reason you could, well, right now, in current law, there is no way to remove them. So this is a great bill to have, because we need some type of apparatus or some type of direction for how to remove the person. So I appreciate the bringer of this bill for bringing the concept of this idea. However, I think if you look on page 2, line 2, what it's doing is putting a period after trustees. What it's taking out is for misconduct or neglect of duty. Right now, how this bill's written is the only time you're going to be able to remove these people is misconduct, so if they commit a criminal act or something of that sort or steal the money, or neglect of duty. And normally neglect of duty is you didn't show up for 3 or 4 consecutive meetings. The difficulty is, and some of you know this example of one of our counties had this problem where you had a hospital board that was doing some things that was causing the hospital to have some debt. They would then inform the county commissioners that they needed to write a check, very large checks, to keep the hospital afloat. But the commissioners had no direct control, so all they were able to do was just keep writing checks to keep the hospital afloat, but they weren't able to go in and actually make the changes that needed to be changed. If you have the power of appointment, you should have the power of removal without any caveats. And so that's what this amendment does. It just allows the Board of County Commissioners to remove the people that they placed on this board, but without any restriction.
Anyone else for their first time? Question being called. All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 211, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 211 has been adopted. House Bill 211 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 215.
House Bill 215 introduced by Representative Lubnow, an act relating to administration of government Department of Health reorganization.
House Bill 215 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 217.
House Bill 217 introduced by Representative Lubnow, an act relating to the Legislature Production States Agreement.
House Bill 217 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 223.
House Bill 223 introduced by Representative Brown, an act relating to property disclosure statement, Wind Estate.
House Bill 223 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered.
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 224.
House Bill 224, introduced by Representative Miller, an act relating to platted plots requirement regarding property.
Chairman Ilway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number one to House Bill 224. This is a technical amendment. It's found on line 13. The citation was wrong, and we hadn't caught it now. It would have ended up in the revisor's bill next year, so let's take care of it now. I call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of second reading amendment number one to House Bill 224, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number one to House Bill 224 has been adopted. House Bill 224 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 230.
House Bill 230, introduced by Representative Brown, an act relating to condemnation, eminent domain, wind energy collector systems.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move second reading amendment number one to House Bill 230 and ask for your favorable consideration. Yesterday, as we dealt with this bill on general file, I raised this this question and this issue with respect to merchant power providers that are actually providing power to public utilities that are serving Wyoming customers. And my numbers, they're round figures generally, but, you know, out of the wind power that we have currently in Wyoming, there's about 60% that's owned by public utilities that serve Wyoming customers. And there's about 40% that are merchant providers. And those merchant, out of those 40% of merchant providers, I don't think there are any that serve or that sell to anybody but public utilities serving Wyoming customers. And so what we've recognized in the bill as drafted is that we want to make sure that those utilities are able to continue to serve Wyoming ratepayers and that they continue to have the ability to, as a last-ditch effort, use eminent domain in order to help them to serve Wyoming customers. And what this amendment simply does is to say we're going to allow that ability for the public utilities as well as those that are selling their energy to the public utilities that serve Wyoming customers. So that's a quick explanation of the bill and the amendment, and I take any questions on it.
For your first time, Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In absence of my good chairman, hopefully I can do a good job in defending this position here. Ladies and gentlemen, of course, the words we need to look at here, the difference, and it's not a gray area. This is a bright line. Difference between the words serve and sell. Do we really want to recognize these merchant companies with the ability to exercise the power of condemnation, when in fact we will see, and I tried to explain to this yesterday, what's happening with this emerging industry. Most of what we've seen to date has been in or near a lot of major transmission lines, and most of the projects, in fact, maybe perhaps all of them that are on the table today, the plans are contemplated to export their electrons out of the state. And I would maintain, when I look at my position as a landowner with a rural electric line going through my property, I can endure these power lines through my property because I know these electrons are going to my friends and neighbors. And the public benefit of this is recognizable. And When I see what's being contemplated today in the plans, the maps, the projects that are on the table, the public benefit being derived clearly is from people that reside outside of our state lines. And with that, we clearly have to resist allowing these merchant companies to have this power of condemnation. Please, let's stand strong in defense of private property rights for our citizens in the state of Wyoming.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against this amendment, this just allows broccoli to spread all over our state of Wyoming without having the plan that we needed in place. The reason that we've asked for this moratorium is to make sure that we figure out how to handle these power lines. Like I talked about yesterday, this isn't an apple. This power plant doesn't sit on one 40-acre plot of land with one set of power lines going out supplying the world. This has got collector lines over 100,000 acres, and we give the power of eminent domain over that 100,000 acres. And if that merchant facility has this loophole, they just have to sell part of their power to a local loophole or a local company to or one local customer, and all of a sudden we've got this huge loophole that just totally gets the moratorium. So I would urge you to think real long and hard about whether we want apples growing up all over the state of Wyoming or broccoli.
Anyone else for their first time? Second time. Second time prior to the sponsor. Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Let's be clear. This amendment does leave the 2-year moratorium in place, and all these projects that you hear about, you know, DC lines heading to other markets to export wind power. With this amendment, the bill would apply to those, and it would preclude eminent domain for those projects. So understand that. All this is talking about is we have recognized, and actually I think the good representative from Carbon County put it well, that there is a specific public benefit for those who are providing power to Wyoming ratepayers and a public benefit for them to have access to that power. Without this, you're only allowing them access to part of the power that at least historically has been developed in Wyoming, rather than allowing access to merchant power and public utility power. And understand, these merchants have to sell to a public utility regulated by the PUC and with all the rate protections and all those things in place. So I think this is actually just a common sense extension of the bill as it is and does leave the moratorium in place.
All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 230, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. That's a close one. Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 230 has failed. House Bill 230 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 249.
House Bill 249, introduced by Representative Nicholas, an act relating to criminal procedure regarding acceptance of a citation.
House Bill 249 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 254.
House Bill 254, introduced by Representative Throne, an act relating to property taxation appeals.
House Bill 254 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. We're at that order of business. Bills on third reading and final passage consent list. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the consent list consisting of the following bills: House Bill 93, House Bill 179, House Bill 189, House Bill 242, and House Bill 255.
Would anyone like to remove any of these bills from the consent list? No? Oh, no. Not right now. Anyone like to remove a bill? The reading clerk will read the bills.
House Bill 93, introduced by the Tribal Relations, an act relating to the creation of unified school districts, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 179, introduced by Representative Petroff, an act relating to energy improvement program, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 189, introduced by Representative Stubson, an act relating to foreclosure and redemption revisions, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 242, introduced by Representative Illaway, an act relating to insurance regarding surplus lines, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 255, introduced by Representative Patton, an act relating to taxation and revenue regarding veterans tax exemption, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the House? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo. Berger,
Berger?
Aye.
Blake?
Aye.
Flickery?
Aye.
Bonner?
Aye.
Botten?
Aye.
Brechtel?
Aye.
Brown excused. Burkhart?
Aye.
Bird?
Aye.
Campbell?
Aye.
Kennedy?
Aye.
Childers?
Aye.
Connolly?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Davison?
Aye.
Edmonds?
Aye.
Eklund?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Freeman?
Aye.
Gay excused. Gingery?
Aye.
Goggles?
Aye.
Greer?
Aye.
Green?
Aye.
Harshman?
Aye.
Harvey?
Aye.
Hunt?
Aye.
Illaway?
Aye.
Yagi?
Aye.
Kasparic?
Aye.
Croker?
Aye.
Crone?
Aye.
Lockhart?
Aye.
Laux?
Aye.
Lubno?
Aye.
Madden?
Aye.
McKim?
Aye.
McComey?
Aye.
Miller excused. Moniz?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Patton?
Aye.
Peasley?
Aye.
Pedersen?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Petroff?
Aye.
Korberg?
Aye.
Roscoe?
Aye.
Simlick?
Aye.
Shepperson?
Aye.
Stewart?
Aye.
Stubson?
Aye.
Teeters?
Aye.
Throne?
Aye.
Vronish?
Aye.
Wallace?
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan?
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave?
Aye.
Mr. Speaker?
Aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 57 ayes, 3 excused. As to House Bill 93, are there any changes? Stubson, aye to no. Croker, aye to no. Korberg, aye to no. Peasley, aye to no. Brechtel, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 52 aye, 5 no, 3 excused. As to House Bill 179, are there any changes? Croker, aye to no. Edmonds, aye to no. Stewart, aye to no. Simlick, aye to no. Teeters, aye to no. Korberg, aye to no. Peasley, aye to no. Yagi, aye to no. Greer, aye to no. Davison, aye to no. Lubno, aye to no. Brechtel, aye to no. Laux, aye to no. McKim, aye to no. Wallace, aye to no. Botten, aye to no. Madden, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 40 ayes, 17 noes, 3 excused. As to House Bill 189, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 57 aye, 3 excused. As to House Bill 242, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 57 ayes, 3 excused. As to House Bill 255, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 57 aye, 3 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of members elected to the House, House Bills 93, 179, 189, 242, and 255 have passed the House. We are at that order of business. The privileges of the floor, Representative Campbell.
Mr. Speaker, privilege to the floor.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Members of the body, I would like to introduce some dear friends of mine that have come from my community, Karen and Gary Albrandt.
We're at that order of business. Bills on third reading and final passage, regular list. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 156.
House Bill 156, introduced by Representative Petroff, an act relating to state lands regarding Grand Teton National Park, transfer of state lands, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
House Bill 156, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake. Flickery,
aye.
Bonner,
aye.
Botten,
aye.
Brechtel,
no.
Brown excused, Burkhart,
aye.
Bird,
aye.
Campbell,
aye.
Kennedy,
aye.
Childers,
aye.
Connolly,
aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Edmonds.
No.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay excused. Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer.
Aye.
Green.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
No.
Kasparic.
Aye.
Croker.
No.
Crone.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
No.
Lubnow.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Miller excused. Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Korberg.
No.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Simlick.
No.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Steward.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
No.
Throne.
Aye.
Braunish.
Aye.
Wallace. Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 46 aye, 11 no, 3 excused.
House Bill 156, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 156 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 214.
House Bill 214, introduced by Representative Buchanan, an act relating to education regarding the Hathaway Scholarship College attendance, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number one to House Bill 214 and ask for your favorable consideration. What this amendment addresses is there are occasions, and in my community, the community college is full. And so the attendees can't obtain the courses that they need at their local community college. What this amendment does is it requires students to be enrolled at the community college to try to take two courses. If the registrar certifies that there are not two of the prerequisite courses necessary in their major, then they can go to the University of Wyoming to and enroll. And they must take the two courses that they couldn't take at the community college. It avoids the situation where there's overflow and we have kids going to other communities for community college rather than the University of Wyoming, because the evils associated both ways seem to apply. And so this just gives those kids an option, if their college is full, to go to the University of Wyoming.
Mr. Speaker, for your first time.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I think this is a good amendment that addresses a concern that could arise with regard to this legislation. I urge your adoption.
Question having been called, all those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment passes. House Bill 214, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Flake. Flickery, Bonner, Botten, Brechtel, Brown excused, Burkhart, Bird, Campbell, Kennedy, Childers, Connolly, Kraft, Davison, Edmonds, Eklund, Esquivel, Freeman, Gay excused, Gingery, Goggles, Greer, Green, Harshman, Harvey,
aye.
Hunt, Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
no.
Kasparic,
aye.
Croker,
aye.
Crone,
no.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
aye.
Lubnow,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
no.
McComey,
no.
Miller excused, Moniz,
no.
Nicholas,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
no.
Pedersen,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Petroff,
aye.
Korberg,
aye.
Roscoe,
aye.
Simlick,
aye.
Shepperson,
aye.
Steward,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Braunish,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan,
no.
Zwanitzer Dave,
no.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 42 ayes, 15 noes, 3 excused.
House Bill 214, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected the House, House Bill 214 has passed the House. We are now at that order of business of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to do an hour and a half lunch and proceed to House Bill 226 or 330, whichever comes first, to get people out on the road because of your hard work. It looks like we're going to get through all of the bills on general file Monday, depending upon the debate. That being said, I move the House resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You have heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Representative Green.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 252. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 252, introduced by Representative Harvey, enacting relating to the administration and government regarding review of state executive department positions. This bill was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Barbudo, Kraft, Gay, Gingrey, Green, Harvey, Hunt, Miller, Peasley. Signed, Representative Kraft, Acting Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harvey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill Number 252 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. This bill is about helping make our government more effective. And right now, there are about 250 employees in all of state government that are in at-will positions. This bill authorizes a study, and it will be conducted by ANI, of all of the state executive department positions, and then they'll report to both the Labor Committee and the Appropriations Committee as to what they find. The meat of the bill is on page 1, down lines 9 through 16. The Department of ANI shall conduct a study of the classification and identification of state executive branch employees and the classification and identification of persons employed as directors, executive secretaries, and those apply to boards and commissions, deputy directors, and deputy directors of boards and commissions in Wyoming. And it shall review those positions which are identified as at will and positions which serve at the pleasure of the governor. And what this is doing is that, you know, we have a new executive chief officer, and, you know, he's not the only new one. There's going to be new ones all the way along the way. But when they come in, they bring in their own cabinet, their own directors of each department, and they come in with their own ideas about how state government should be run, about how employees should serve the public. And so it's to their astonishment that some of the biggest agencies that we have only have one or two at-will employees. And so what you get is a maintenance of the culture that exists within the department. And so there are times when the chief executive officer would make a recommendation, his director would further that agenda. And yet many times, and we've seen it in this body over and over and over again, that we implement programs and then we're astounded to find out that they're not implemented, or that they're not implemented the way we directed them to do it. And the list goes on and on about some of the people that are entrenched in the culture of the job that they've been in for many years. This is just a way for the governor to be able to further his agenda. And that is, if they've got those mid-level management positions that don't cooperate, that can't catch the vision, that perhaps have been difficult to work with, it gives them the opportunity to convert them to at-will. Let's go to the amendment next, which is on page 3. And it just adds one more subsection. And so if you start on page 2, it talks about these are the things that they're going to analyze, who will be at will and who will not. The rate of pay, responsive and filling positions, duties and responsibilities, the supervisory roles and the number of employees they supervise, knowledge, experience, and skills. Now here's the amendment, and it inserts one more criteria, the position based on the agency's organizational structure. And so at this time, Mr. Chairman, I would ask for your aye vote on that amendment, and then we'll get on with the rest of the bill. Question on the amendment.
Question being called. All those in favor of the standing committee number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, my only concern with the bill is with A&I conducting the study, it's almost like the chicken in the hen house. They're investigating themselves. And that would, when I was serving as chair of the Employee Compensation Commission, why we were having that problem when we were trying to deal with salaries and some of these other things, and that's why we went to the Hayes Group to do this. Okay, the fox in the hen house, excuse me. But anyway, I think the idea of the study is a good idea, but when the people doing the study are studying themselves, I'm not sure that's really a good idea. So maybe we need to look at that and in some conversation with some of the people behind me, maybe my concerns are being taken care of.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On behalf of your committee, too, this is an area that we discuss year in, year out, and we thought it was time that we address it with a study. But it's more intensive than that with A&I. And working with the executive branch on this. We're always in a quandary in identifying these positions and the level of pay and benefits. We've had a Hayes study, a group, where we've had this studied. We've worked on market pay and some other compensation issues and benefits. The other thing that we do in our committee is we work on state retirement. So this, the whole package, it's extensive, and we struggle with that. You'll be seeing in the budget coming forth on February 14th, but hopefully you'll do some homework this weekend. You'll see that we're eliminating 244 positions from the A&I section. And so this study is important, and it is being done within house, but I think we have the experts, and we have a lot of study information already in place. And this will move it forward and work in cooperation with the new administration. It's a very opportune time for us to do this work. And it'll be before us in November of next year, before the executive branch puts their budget together and before your committee, too, works the budget for 13-14. So it's critical information that we need. So I support the bill wholeheartedly.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a good bill, folks, and it's. I think there's one thing that we need to be aware of, though, and that is that this bill will solve one obvious problem for new chief executives that come in, but unfortunately it raises another problem, and this was discussed in detail with the previous chief executive, And that is in the case of when administrations change, and as soon as an announcement is made that chief executive isn't going to run or anything anymore, all the at-will employees start running out the door and looking for work. And he brought up to me in this discussion that one of these times we have to start seriously looking at some kind of a conditional severance or a conditional bonus or something like that to kind of provide a carrot for these at-will employees to stick it out until the term is over with and a new executive takes over. So I guess in reference to this bill and what you intend to do in the study, is it within the context of this bill to examine that potential problem and to have recommendations simultaneous with the recommendations that would come regarding the number of at-will employees being increased? Because as I see it, if the result is that this committee or this board, the study results in saying, yes, there should be more at-will employees for the reasons that you have well discussed, I think we almost have to look at the problem that it would cause and be ready for solving that, you know, kind of concomitant to the solving of the at-will employee numbers. Thank you.
Representative Yeagie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just think bills like this are way good, and one of the handouts that I gave you is the, well, I gave you a couple, but they had to do with the inflation of all of our agencies, including our executive branch. So I just applaud any time we can look at our state government and make us more efficient and see where we can improve things. So I just stand in favor of this and applaud the bringer of this.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lots of questions, and they're really good. And I think that this bill does require really good, hard examination by this body. In answer to my good colleague from House District 40, if you go to page 3 of the bill, line 15, it starts, "This study shall..." And on line 17, "estimate the costs associated with classifying and identifying positions as at-will positions provided in this subsection." And then the next part, the two little I, "determine a process and a timeline for implementing any modifications to at-will." And let me tell you a little bit about how private industry does this. One is it's conditional. Well, first of all, I should say that there are personal rights associated with the contracts that we have with state employees, and we are asking them to give up some of those rights. And that's exactly what my colleague from House District 40 was trying to allude to. And so we're going to study how we're going to do this. Private industry does it in many ways, but the two that I am the most familiar with is that they either buy out the right by giving them a certain percentage of their annual income. I have to tell you that this is draft number 6, I think, of this bill, because we tried different ways of how we're going to do it. When we got the fiscal note at just doing 5% of the annual salary of those positions that we tentatively identified, and we hadn't even gone through all the agencies, it was a $10 million bill. And I said, no, we got to go back to the drawing board, because we're not going to go that much. Another way that private industry deals with it is that when it comes time for a salary increase, then you can sign the at-will statement and then get a salary increase. If you choose not to sign the at-will statement, it doesn't mean that you lose your job. You just don't get the raise until you sign the at-will statement. So those are the two ways that I am the most familiar with, and one is the buyout, and the other one is the wait out process, if you would. And so until we have the number of employees identified and who they are, what positions they contain, it's really too premature to decide how we're going to deal with it. And so I would submit to you that, well, actually it's in the bill. On page 4, the study results shall be presented to the Joint Labor, Health, and Social Services and the Joint Appropriation Interim Committees no later than September 1st, and then we're going to study and review the information and determine the extension, or that means how far down the food chain we're going to go of the at-will employees. And then the Labor Committee is tasked with developing legislation to be introduced next year in the budget session. And then we turn that over to the Appropriations Committee that also will have opportunity to work on that bill. So this study will result in a bill next year during the budget session, but it also gives our Appropriations Committee time to work with the budget. It also gives the governor in developing his own biennial budget the opportunity to figure out how we're going to deal with it and how we're going to pay for it. So right now it's just a study. Who are we talking about? How many? And then what are we going to do with them?
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Harvey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so at the recommendation that House Bill 252 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. House Bill 252 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 232. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 232, introduced by Representative Nicholas, an act relating to workers' compensation impairment ratings. This bill was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Barbuto, Kraft, Green, Harvey, Hunt, Miller, no. Gay, Peasley, excused, Gingrey, sign representing Harvey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harvey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill Number 232 do pass. And I'll turn the explanation over to the good sponsor of the bill.
Representative Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, members of the House, this is a bill that deals with the Wyoming Workers' Compensation Act. It's very simple. We're asking that we replace the current AMA Guide 6th edition, which is a book used to establish physical impairments for injured workers in Wyoming workers' compensation cases, back to the 5th edition of the AMA Guides. To explain what this really means, it will be an increase in impairments for about 20 or 30% of the injured workers who are injured doing workers' during extra hazardous duties. The 6th edition, it came out in 2008. The Scribner of the 6th edition reported that approximately of all the ratings and impairments that you receive going through all the body parts, that it was his estimation that approximately 40% of the impairments would go down, or all impairments would go down roughly about 40%. So the way the law currently is read, in our Workers' Compensation Act, it says that the Wyoming Workers' Compensation Division will automatically adopt the most current edition of the AMA guides instead of having the legislature review each edition that comes out. And what we're respectfully asking this legislature to do is take that decision-making away from the drafters of the AMA guide, evaluate exactly how the new edition affects injured workers, and then make a determination on whether or not benefits should decrease merely because the new Scribner of the AMA guides proffered a more conservative addition, which literally lowered, in some instances, 30 or 40 or 50 or 60% of the impairment awards to injured workers in Wyoming. And just to give a little background information, if you have a 1% impairment, so if you cut your hand or a loss of a finger or a joint, 1% impairment in Wyoming right now is about $1,400. So if you, I've passed a handout that you can see out there. On one side is a map. You get nice, pretty colors. On the other side is the 5th edition versus 6th on certain body parts. You'll see that, number one, on a cervical sprain where you have ongoing chronic pain after 6 months, in the 5th edition, you got a 6% whole body impairment, so you got about $8,500. Under the 6th edition that was automatically adopted and not reviewed by this body or by anybody else, you get $1,400. And so what happened was by publishing the new edition, the amounts arbitrarily were established by the select committee on the AMA guide that drafts the 6th edition. And the logic that they have, if I just walk through it, the reasons that they changed the impairment ratings is not because medical science has improved and because people are better off because of medical science. That's not the reason they did it. If you look in the preamble of the book, and if you look at the, and I passed out a bunch of literature in committee, but I didn't want to hit everybody with 6 inches of material. It was merely a political or a philosophical decision to thinking that they just wanted to lower the impairment ratings and make it lower. And so what I have two positions on that. Number one is that it's not the prerogative of the select committee in the AMA guide, in AMA, to decide how much money Wyoming workers' compensation injuries get. That should be our decision. And if this body wants to go with the 6th edition, they ought to at least know what the ramifications are and what happens if you accept it, instead of having a statute that says it's automatically adopted. Now, if you go to the other side of the exhibit, you'll see a map of the United States. And I present this because I want to explain that there's a trend in the United States. There are 10 states that have statutes similar to ours. In other words, that say automatically use the most recent edition of the AMA guides. And so there's 10 states, and so 10 states use the 6th edition. 13 states use the 5th edition. It's the most widely used in all the states. And you'll see my handwriting on the far right side, Vermont, New Hampshire, Nevada, Iowa, Kentucky. All of those states recently, in the last year and a half, did interim studies, evaluated thoroughly the difference between the 5th and the 6th edition of the AMA guides, and concluded that the 6th edition was not the one to use and to go back to the 5th edition. So they actually modified their statutes based upon their interim studies to say, instead of saying the most recent, that to go back to the 5th edition. So the trend is to slowly chip away, state by state, going back to the 5th edition instead of the 6th edition. The other states, as you can also see, there's a 4th edition, there's a 3rd edition, and we've used all those editions in Wyoming as we go up over time, and so if you do workers' compensation law, we're familiar with all of those. But my point is that the 5th edition, the change from the 5th to the 6th was not because of medical science. It was a matter of political philosophy. And I would submit that it's our responsibility to determine what the awards are as opposed to somebody else. Finally, there's a hidden injury to injured workers with switching to the 6th edition as well. In Wyoming, you have an impairment. And if that impairment affects you to the degree that you can no longer go back to work and do what you were doing. So if you can't go back to work in the oil field, for example, then you're also entitled to a disability award. And there's a difference between impairment and disability. Disability you only receive if you cannot go back to work and make a comparable wage. If you're hurt, if you have a low back injury, you go back to work and you try it for 5 years, and then your back gets worse because of your injury, you have the opportunity to go back and you get a rating under the 5th edition. Or under the 6th edition, excuse me. Then you go back and try to get a rating again. What happens is anyone that was rated under the 5th edition is going to be up here for a back injury at 10%. 6th edition, you're going to be down here. So you're not going to have an increase in impairment. So all those people that try to increase their disability because their condition gets worse can't do it because they're already rated too high by the prior edition. So essentially, they lost the opportunity to be able to have a disability, even though they can't go back to work and do that, the work that they were originally paid to do. So it's an inadvertent injury to those individuals just because we switched from the 5th to the 6th edition. And I know that's kind of complicated, and I don't want to take too long, but if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a couple of questions, and I just was wondering how often the AMA's guide comes out. That's my first question. I didn't know if it was yearly or every other year. And then I guess my next question was that if the seventh edition pays more, will you be coming back to ask us to adopt? I mean, is this going to be a yearly change that we're going to have to make in statute based on what the this select committee comes up with, Mr. Chairman?
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to get my mind wrapped around what the intent is. Is there some sort of nefarious accusation that the AMA is being a political organization? Our policy has been that we adopt the most current version, and if we're going to cherry-pick whichever one might benefit us the most, I'm not sure that that's a good policy position either. My question is, what is this going to potentially do to our workers' compensation rates in Wyoming if we are going to pay out more? And there has to be, in my mind, a better reason to support this other than the old one doesn't pay as much as the new one, or the old one pays more than the new one, and we should keep the old one. So I guess I'm on and against the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Nicholas.
To answer Chairman Korbrick's question, you can't really pick how often the guide comes out. It depends on the management and the hierarchy in the AMA. The fifth edition was published in 2000, so it was good for 8 years. Before that, the fourth edition and fourth edition revised was in effect for about 6.5 years. There is now a sixth edition revised that came out literally about a week ago. So it's unlikely that there are going to be any major changes in the sixth edition for, you know, at the least 3 or 4 years. But once again, that has a lot to do with who's running the show there. So the answer is, if we adopt the fifth edition, then at some point in time, when the seventh edition comes out, it probably won't be for an extended period of time, then it would be either our responsibility or have the Workers' Compensation Division evaluate the new edition and make recommendations one way or the other to the legislature on which one to follow. With regards to the AMA guides, the drafters of the AMA guides, the truth is that only 17% of all the doctors in the United States belong to the AMA. There is a small select committee that does impairment ratings, which is a very small component of the AMA. And literally the scriveners of that are a select committee, and what they did is instituted their personal philosophy on how ratings should be done. And whether you agree with it or don't agree with it, and I don't call it political, it's just or an agenda. I just say that it's a different philosophy than was used in the past, and that philosophy results in lower ratings on different back injuries. Some of their ratings are actually a little bit higher, and some of them are the same. But on some of the major injuries, like on the handout, the ratings are lower. So it just depends on how you want to face that horse, I mean, from the front or the back. With regards to the rates, the impact on the rates will not be significant. In 2006, workers' compensation paid out around $7 million in impairment. 2007, around $7 million. 2008, when this went into effect, they paid out $7 million. 2009, they only paid out $6 million. Last year, they had about 300-400 more claims than before, and they paid out $9 million in impairment ratings. I asked the division if they could put any type of a numerical value on what the impact would be, and they can't do it. But my estimation that this would be probably around $500,000 in increased benefits to injured workers in the state, just with a rough guess, just from my background and experience.
Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a little bit of a follow-up to the good representative from House District 5's questions. I'm curious as to what the rates will go to for the employers who have to pay into these. If their rates are going to go up, down, stay the same, whatever, especially considering there was no fiscal note attached to this for what the state will pay out, I'm interested in what the rates would be for the employers.
Representative Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I asked that question to several folks in the division They told me that they did not believe it will have any impact on rates. And the fund, the Workers' Compensation Fund, has a surplus in excess of $1 billion, is my understanding. And so that's really not going to be an issue.
Representative Botten.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The sponsor of this bill is a friend. And we're on opposite sides. We both practice in this area of law, and we have a lot of fun together. I just want to offer you a perspective from the other side. The sixth edition is supposed to be a little different from the fifth edition in two ways. One is that the sixth edition is supposed to be a little more reproducible, and that means somebody who does a rating under the sixth edition, a doctor, it's more likely to come out with the same percentage of impairment rating if another doctor does the same thing. There's a little less repeatability under the fifth edition. Now, the next difference is the fifth edition is more subjective, and the sixth edition is more objective. What does that mean? That means in the fifth edition, the patient can say, "Ow, that hurts," and that's subjective, and that goes into the mix. Under the sixth edition is more objective, meaning that we're focusing in on actual tests like MRIs and things of that nature. Let's look at the handout. You see the difference of percentages. Look at that number 7, knee replacement. During committee, the representative from the division testified that, you know, one of the reasons that there's a difference in percentages of impairments between the fifth and the sixth is that technology in the medical field has gotten better. A total knee replacement, he said, is just so much better today than it was back a while ago. And a person who's sustained a total knee replacement is just less impaired. So I'm sure we've seen the commercials of people playing tennis with knee replacements. So that's one of the reasons that we have a change. I think that, you know, whichever addition that this body suggests is adopted, I think the workers' comp system is able to adapt. That's fine. I'm just urging you to consider that the sixth edition, for what it is worth, probably not much, but my opinion is that the sixth is a little bit better than the fifth. Finally, the representative from Workers' Safety and Compensation Division indicated during his testimony at the committee that they did a study of comparison of not hypotheticals, but actual cases in the workers' compensation system over the years to determine what the difference was in the ratings that would be given under the fifth versus the sixth edition. And then what they found was, no, not all percentages of impairment are reduced under the sixth edition. It's a mixed bag. So moving back, he said, to the fifth edition isn't going to mean that everybody gets an increased impairment rating now. Some are going to lose. Some are going to win. Some are going to stay the same. So this isn't a cure-all that's being suggested. This is just going to change it for some. Some are going to get a benefit, and some are going to get a loss. Thank you.
Representative Nicholas.
Just a couple of follow-ups on what you've heard. Number 8 on a knee replacement. Right now, if you injure your knee so badly that you have to have a knee replacement, you get $8,500. And I would submit that's not a lot of money for a person that lost his knee because he just got ran over by a truck and had to have a knee replacement. Under the fifth edition, if we go back to it, he'd get $14,000. Once again, that's not a lot of money if you had to go through the surgeries and all those things. I mean, what we award in workers' compensation benefits is nothing compared to what you would have if you had a personal injury claim or what the real value is on the market. It's just not a lot of money. And so from that standpoint, what's fair, $8,000 or $14,000 for a knee replacement? The subjective versus objective language, actually, I would submit that that's really a subjective comment because some doctors said the fifth edition is more objective and that the sixth is more subjective. And, in fact, lots of doctors say that the sixth edition is much, much more complicated, and you got to do a 30-hour class just in order to read it and interpret it. So I think that's a dog chasing its tail. If the author of the sixth edition says there's a 40% reduction, I wouldn't be bringing this bill if it was kind of a balanced quid pro quo on the various between the two editions. There is a real difference. And no one has addressed the problem with having a rating under the fifth, having increased impairment, but not being able to have disability benefits because if you have a back injury, you'll never get that high again. So even if you can't go back to work in the oil patch, making $20 an hour, now you're relegated and you have a high school education, you're relegated to $6 an hour, you get nothing for disability because we're using the sixth edition. Those people just lose. And that was an absolutely unintended purpose of this thing.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious, when you do change the edition, and my understanding is on the sixth edition that there is actually extended coverage, so it goes out further than the fifth edition. And then the second part of that would be, I've never known people who are under a program who wouldn't ask for retroactive benefits, so that if there was a higher increase, why they wouldn't appeal that. And I know that our fund is flush. We've done that, and we've done a good job there, and I certainly want to support those individuals that are injured in a work-related situation. But I am curious to what that would cost our division to go back and to address those appeals.
Representative Nicholas.
Madam Chairman, the way that the bill is crafted, the individuals who have been rated under the sixth edition can't go back, and because once you receive an impairment, you receive an impairment. The only time you can get an increase is if your impairment worsens, and then you can get an increase in impairment. So those folks that between 2008 and now, that's just the boat they're in. In terms of extending out, there is no difference between the fifth and the sixth. And how you implement them won't make any difference. And like I say, the division doesn't believe this will have a financial impact at all. I think it will have some financial impact, but it's not going to be more than a couple hundred thousand dollars. And because we're talking about 600 or 700 injured workers per year that are going to go from 5,000 to 7,000 or from 10,000 to 12,000.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Oh, here again with institutional knowledge, it just makes me feel old, but okay, I guess I'm experienced. I sat through the Labor Committee in 2009 as we went through and revised all of the Workers' Compensation Act. And what the former chairman talked about, the last speaker just talked about, was doesn't the sixth edition extend benefits out? No, we did that. The sixth edition didn't change that at all. But we went back. When the fund was in trouble, we shortened the time that people could receive a disability. And then in 2009, we extended that back out. And I have to tell you, other than the midwife bill, this is probably the most painful testimony I ever sat through, that there were so many people that were injured. And, you know, at the end of one of the days, I asked one of the division heads, I said, are there any of these folks that are fraud? And he said, maybe one. And we had a lot of people that came and testified about how their lives have been ruined because of job injuries and what a small amount of money that they received. And we didn't think the sixth edition was going to last very long because there were so many flaws in it. And so we thought that they were going to come up with the seventh edition right away, and that didn't happen. There is a revised sixth edition, but we put the most current edition in there thinking that there was going to be a revision right away. And, in fact, I believe that we went backwards, that we really should have stayed with the fifth edition. And then, you know, part of the job of this body is to review things as they come along. That's why we put sunset dates on things. That's why we reviewed legislation along the way. And it gives us an opportunity when we do that review to see what is going to work the best for the people of Wyoming, what is going to be most cost effective for the state, and how the process works. So I am on and in favor of this bill.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This isn't a radical departure. We had the fifth edition for 8 years. It worked just fine. It's just that sometimes we try something new and it doesn't work, and when it doesn't work, then it's the time to evaluate it and go back. And what's happened here is this isn't working. And I was also on that committee in 2009 and also sat through hours and hours of painful testimony about how inequitable and unfair our workers' compensation system is. We have an obligation to the employers in the state of Wyoming, but we also have an obligation to the workers of the state of Wyoming. And I just want to ask yourself, if you had the option to take $14,000 or have your knee replaced, would you take the $14,000 and have the knee replaced, or would you keep your knee the way it is? And that's the kind of questions that we're asking people. And so keep that in perspective, because we're dealing with people's real lives here and the consequences of workplace injuries where we've done a compromise, where they gave up their right to sue their employers, and we said we would take care of them. And we have the obligation to take care of those workers, and doing it the way we used to do it that worked makes a lot more sense sometimes when you evaluate that. And so I urge you to consider, brothers and sisters of the 61st, the real-world consequences to the folks.
Chairman Korberg.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I just have one more question, and maybe the good sponsor of the bill already answered it. But the revised edition of this, the revised sixth edition, no one's had time to look at that to see if it might actually maybe even be better than the fifth, or we know for sure that it is not better than the fifth, that it didn't really address our concerns here today.
Representative Nicholas.
Chairman Korberg, the revised sixth edition I looked at briefly, and it doesn't have any substantive changes for the most part. It's more a few injuries here and there and kind of a tic-tac thing. It's not significant.
Representative Peasley.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I was on the committee, and I voted against this. And I guess I just better at least let you know my perspective. I didn't want us to go out and pick a source that seemed convenient. And I don't want us to have to pick among several different treatises based on which one provides the best benefits. It seemed to me as if we were going to tie ourselves to the science so that we don't have to revisit this each year. We're not going to find ourselves getting drug into debates about how much everybody gets paid for a knee replacement or doesn't get paid for it. It seemed to me as though we made a decision years ago to attach our confidence through the department on the AMA's scientific work. Now we look at it and we see it doesn't pay as much as we thought it was going to, so we want to abandon it. It reminds me a little bit of the global warming debate. I don't want to just latch onto our favorite science and then make policy based on that. And I didn't hear enough criticism of the sixth edition other than it brought rates down in certain areas. I didn't hear the we've heard discussion here today about later on, if we want to, if the people with the unemployment or with the workman's comp department come forward with suggestions, we'll move to a different treatise or a different edition. But I didn't even hear them coming out and being critical of the sixth edition. It was just all I was getting from it was in certain areas it comes down. Those seem to be attached to progress in medicine, and I think we've got to be careful. Otherwise, we're going to be debating each year which one of these we're going to pick based on which one gives the most benefit. And then it's going to be a real long session. So I think you better look at this close before you decide. Thank you.
Representative Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Peasley, the change from the fifth to the sixth is not based upon science. It's based upon a philosophy. And that was testimony at the hearing. And I gave you about four or five large handouts that will go through all those issues, but I don't want to go through those. But it's not based upon science. It's based upon philosophy. And I would submit that it's our obligation to know what each new addition does and how it affects our workers and whether we agree with it or not. Thank you.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Harvey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so the recommendation that Bill number 232 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 232 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 253. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 253, introduced by Representative Kasparyk, an act relating to the Wyoming Nurse Practice Act. This bill was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Kraft, Gay, Gingrey, Green, Harvey, Hunt, Miller, Peasley. Signed, Representative Harvey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harvey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 253 do pass, and I turn the explanation over to the fine sponsor of the bill.
Representative Kasparyk.
Mr. Chairman and Member 61st, this is really an easy bill. This bill relates to the Wyoming Nurse Practice Act, which sets rules and regulations for the practice and education of nurses in the state of Wyoming. Under this act, and if you look at the bill, Section 1, 33-21-154 exemptions, this bill asks you to make a minor change, which changes the practice of nursing as an exemption for those students who are students of a initial school of nursing, an associate degree, a bachelor's degree, and are doing clinical practice along with their education. What this bill does is changes that so that nurses can practice nursing without benefit of licensure if they're enrolled in any program that's approved by the State Board of Nursing. What this would do is ease the way for nurses who are returning back to the workforce to do a refresher course and do clinical practice during that period of time while they're doing a refresher course. What this does is helps get us more nurses back into practice in a time when we're slowly recovering from a nursing shortage. And I would stand for any questions related to the bill.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Harvey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Bill number 253 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 253 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 264. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 264, introduced by Representative Harshman, an act relating to education regarding Hathaway scholarships, school notifications. This bill was sent to the House Education Committee, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Burkhart, Freeman, Crone, Laux, Teeters, no. Connolly, Croker, Madden. Signed, Representative Teeters, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Teeters?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 264 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I turn the sponsorship of the bill over to the gentleman from the center of the state.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, quickly, I put a handout in your tray. Picture's worth 1,000 words. And studies show that you'll only hear 15% of what I say. So it has the Hathaway logo, the official State of Wyoming Hathaway logo. Ladies and gentlemen, this bill really is to correct an oversight in the original intention 6 years ago of the original Hathaway legislation. And the whole idea about the Hathaway is it's not a college thing. It's really a high school thing. And we wanted to really encourage our high school kids. Well, part of this is to really become part of the culture and how we roll this out and advertise it. Well, the original intent was to have that each piece of mail that comes from our school districts at least have a logo on there that shows the Hathaway. Maybe it's on the back of the envelope. Maybe it's, And several of our school districts are doing this, but it's been interpreted by some school districts that, frankly, they don't have to do that. And so changed the words a little bit, added teacher or administrator. That really covers all the mail that will leave our schools. And just to have a logo and maybe a link to a website on there to really move, as we move forward into the next decades, to make this really part of our culture. So I'd stand for questions. Thank you.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This came through the committee I was serving on, and if you want to, you know, open it up to page 2 and look at what it's doing here, I'll tell you why I voted against it. And, you know, I don't have a question so much for the reasoning behind what's already been said, but if this doesn't pass, the line 9 will simply read, communication from a school district to a parent or guardian of a student, you know, and so on and so forth. That's the way it was. But now we're saying, now a school teacher or administrator. And, you know, I don't know what kind of notes and written communication a typical, you know, school teacher has in elementary school and what they might put on a note to send home, you know, to a parent so their kids would read it. But, you know, it might be some kind of a disciplinary thing, and it might be a personal type issue with the child. And, you know, I think the other thing that really, really upset me about this is that, as you all know, this legislature, there's a perception out there that we're trying to get at teachers and administrators from a myriad of reasons. And this just seems to be a nitpicky little way of needling them one more time and saying the legislature is watching you. This time we're watching you to see what kind of letterhead you have on your notes or what kind of messages you're sending home and what the standard logo is on these messages. And I think, to me, I find it almost humiliating that we're even talking about this. Thank you.
Representative Botten.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a brief question for the sponsors. So if a teacher emails me, every email is going to have one of these statements on it? Thanks.
Are you ready for the question? Oh. Representative Harshman.
Folks, I think that I don't want you to read too much into this. It's not about humiliation or putting down schools or anything else. It's really about the kind of culture we're building, and we want Hathaway to be a part of that. And it's just a simple advertising thing. And so it's more of an issue, and several of our school districts are doing this. And that was really our intent, to have it as a piece of your logo, just so it kind of builds that thing out there and advertises. So. Anyway, as far as email, you know, I think it'd be more in the website issue. And many of our school districts have that. They have links to the websites right on them. So if there's any further questions, I'd call for the question. Thank you.
Question being called. All those in favor, Chairman Teeter's motion. And when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that bill number 264 do pass. Please say aye. Those opposed, no.
No.
The chair is in doubt. Division. All those in favor, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. House Bill 264 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 191. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 191, introduced by Representative Stubson, an act relating to taxation and revenue regarding wind power taxation. This bill was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blickery, Childers, Goggles, Peterson, Vronish, No, Camel, Miller, Semlek, Excused, Madden, signed, Representative Childers, Chairman.
Chairman Semlek.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're way deep into the hierarchy of the Revenue Committee here with the Chairman and the Vice Chairman both gone, but I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Bill Number 191 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. We'll turn the explanation of the bill over to the bill sponsor from House District 56. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll sort of explain the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment together, and then we can move the Standing Committee Amendment. Just to talk a little bit about where we've been, where we are, and where we're going with this issue of taxing wind in Wyoming. And you'll remember, those of you who were here last session will remember that we passed a comprehensive regulatory regime for wind, both giving counties authority to deal with the impact and giving the ISC additional authority to site and permit wind facilities. This is really kind of the last remaining building block of the significant portions of tax regulatory and tax policy surrounding wind in Wyoming. And 12 years ago, we made the decision as a legislative body to exempt renewables, including wind, from the sales tax, and did that in an effort to bring those to the state, and that worked. And as we've seen, a number of wind producers have come to the state. My first session in 2008, I think it was, we began to discuss whether that made sense in the context of the growing wind energy in Wyoming, and we removed that exemption. And that exemption is set to expire on January 1st, 2012. So wind facilities that go into that purchase wind equipment following January 1st, 2012 are subject to the sales tax. Last year, we began to talk about what other forms of taxation we should approach with respect to wind. And the governor's office came forward with a proposal that was modified significantly by this body that ended up putting a $1 megawatt hour tax on wind that would go into effect on January 1st, 2012, but would only apply 3 years after you started generating. So, for example, if a wind farm goes into business today, they won't have to pay that, even though it goes into effect on January 1st, 2012. They don't have to pay it for another 3 years after they begin generation. And you may recall a lot of discussion on this floor last session about, is that the right amount? Is this the right kind of approach to taxation? And we really didn't know. And I think there was wide acceptance of the fact that we didn't know, and this was the dollar a megawatt hour was commonly referred to as a sort of placeholder. Put it into law so it would force us to look at it and see if it made sense or not. And the developments since then have revealed a couple of different things. There was a model that was developed by the governor's office and used in great depth throughout the interim that gave us an example of what this cost was versus other states, whether this taxation left us competitive with other states, what it really would bring in, and what sort of distribution would lead from the tax. And one of the things that became very clear is that the structure of the tax, while the amount of the tax is actually pretty darn close to what you would want if you want to tax and yet not tax the business out of existence, but the structure of the tax itself posed a real barrier to any additional wind development in the state of Wyoming. And so the Revenue Committee and a number of members on this floor dealt with this through the interim and struggled with this and weren't able to come to a solution. But one of the members of that committee, a senator from my home county, developed what I think is a really comprehensive, common sense approach to wind taxation that does a couple of things. First, it folds the sales tax and the excise tax together into one tax, and it moves that $1 a megawatt hour to $2 a megawatt hour. It leaves the property tax in place. And remember, these developments have always had to pay property tax, and they continue to have to pay property tax. That doesn't change under the scope of this bill. But what it does do is it changes the structure of the tax, and so that the structure of the tax itself isn't a burden. And so to those of you who have seen a profile of the tax curve on these sort of developments, you see a huge spike at the beginning because the property tax is the highest at that point, and you have to pay all those sales tax. And what we learned is that because companies typically have to finance that tax, they end up paying over a 20-year life of a project almost twice the amount of the tax in interest to you know, some Wall Street banker in order to pay that tax. So what this does is that this proposal actually increases the amount of revenue coming to the state, not significantly, but a little bit. But I know those of you who have heard from those in wind development understand that it saves them a bunch of money because they no longer have to have these carrying costs. The other great benefit for us as a state is, you remember when we talked about this last year, one of the things we wanted was both to diversify the tax base, but also to stabilize the tax base. And what we've done with building the sales tax into this, we've sort of undermined that attempt to reach stability, because you have a huge amount of tax revenue at the front end of the project that dwindles down to almost nothing at the end of the project. So as development goes, you see these swings in the tax from the project. So what this does is it stabilizes it out over time. You have the $3 a megawatt hour, and it eliminates that instability that we've kind of structurally built into the tax. A couple of the other issues that have really been a struggle as we've put this bill together, and I'll confess to you now that this has been a sort of dynamic bill as we've worked through the process, as you can tell from the standing committee amendment. But there are still a couple of issues to address on this bill. One of the things we were dealing with is, how do you deal with incumbent carriers? How do you deal with those that are under the current tax regime? Because, remember, they came in without a sales tax. We said, come in, we're not going to impose a sales tax on you. So you can't really take them to $3 a megawatt hour, because that incorporates that sales tax feature. So it would be like retroactively imposing a sales tax on them. For example, the data centers. If we invited them in now and then 5 years from now decide, no, we want to tax you for what you built 5 years ago. So you can't really jump them up to the $3 a megawatt. And so we were thinking, do you have two structures, one for existing wind farms and one for those built after January 1st, 2012, or how do you handle that? And we really came to a compromise agreement that you can see on your bill on page 3. And just to be clear, there's a stepped-up phase-in approach on page 3 to the excise tax, and this only applies to wind farms in existence now. Remember, the $3 megawatt hour under this proposal kicks in January 1st, 2012, and they don't get that extra 3-year grace period. Anybody who begins generating after January 1st, 2012 has to pay the $3 megawatt hour tax. So this graduated tax applies only to those incumbent producers, and what they did is we backed off the dollar an hour. We let them sort of phase that in over time, but what they gave in exchange is eventually they're going to be taxed at that full $3 a megawatt hour. They're going to go up so that across the state we have uniform taxation of wind farms, not two different tax regimes. And so that was sort of a compromise give and take between those that are producing power right now and where we want to get them as far as the tax base. The other real difficult issue we've dealt with is distribution. And remember, not 1 cent of tax money has flowed as a result of either the sales tax or the excise tax yet. Nobody's received any money from that yet. But I can tell you, people have looked on that and are banking on those tax dollars already. And so we have been striving to reach a distribution that everybody can live with, both the local governments, the state, and that recognizes the real impacts on counties in particular. And so this is what the Standing Committee Amendment primarily deals with, is the distribution. And the way it was structured in the bill is not good and actually leads to an inordinate amount going to the state and not to the county. So we fixed that with the Standing Committee Amendment. But if you look on, I gave you as Coach says, one pager that's front and back, and on one of the pages there's a chart that you can look at that reflects and is an easier way to follow how tax distribution works under this bill. And it's for currently in the state we have 1,400 about megawatts installed capacity. This looks at let's assume we've got 1,500 more megawatts installed capacity, and this was done by our LSO. And it shows you how that would split, and it would go 20% would go to an impact assistance fund that is there and available for counties. And as they go and apply under the Industrial Siting Council, they could apply for impact assistance funds, and they would be paid essentially 2% of the build-out value of that project to assist them in dealing with, you know, additional sheriff's patrols, all of those sorts of impacts that they see from this development. The remaining share, the 80%, is split almost essentially identical to the way we split sales tax right now, with one exception. For the first couple years, or until that impact assistance fund would reach $15 million, the state share would flow into that impact assistance fund to make sure that it is filled up and ready to go when projects come down the pike. And I will tell you that this is one of the most dynamic pieces, and I would anticipate that if I get the opportunity to visit with you on second reading on this bill, we will be tweaking this a little bit more. But it does set up a situation where we make sure that there are funds available for those upfront impacts for counties, but it also sets a continuing flow of money to the state, to local governments, and especially those local governments impacted by the projects. I guess just one final comment before I take questions on the bill. You know, there is an importance of getting this done this session. And I mentioned to you not one penny has flowed from this tax, and yet we already have people with vested interests with their lines drawn. If we do not straighten out the tax issue this session, there is, of course, continued uncertainty into the future. But more importantly, it becomes inordinately more difficult to do this once people start receiving some tax flow under the current distribution regime. So with that, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment, ask for your favorable vote on that, and then we can maybe discuss the bill.
Chairman Semlich, do you move the Standing Committee Amendment?
Mr. Chairman, the Standing Committee Amendment has been moved.
Question being called.
Mr. Chairman, before we ask for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment, we have an opportunity to comment on it.
Chairman Semlich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to draw some attention to the Standing Committee Amendment, Romanet I. The good sponsor did talk a little bit about this particular aspect of the Standing Committee Amendment that deals with the diversion of money that comes from the state share of the tax. It's going to go into this account up to $15 million for impact assistance, and I was just wondering if we had any idea of how long it might take under the tax proposal contemplated in this bill to reach that $15 million so it could be used for local impact assistance.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It depends is sort of the answer to the question. It would take... If you look at, for example, the example I handed out on 1,500 megawatts, if you have the full tax on a project, it would only take actually a couple years to get to that $15 million period. But understanding that we're only going to be, you know, for the next couple years, we're only dealing with tax flows from incumbent producers into that, it would take a significantly longer period of time. And that's why one of the significant amendments I foresee on second reading is an amendment that would actually front fill this the impact assistance fund by a loan from either the LSRA or probably the LSRA, which would be paid back through the tax flows on this. So you'd have that up front and available for projects that come through. So, I mean, as because that is a good point, as the industry stands right now and given the tax they pay, it would take a number of years for that to build up.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To follow up on the good representative from District 1's question, looking at the handout that you have passed out, it has this generation tax of $3 per megawatt hour. However, if we would further specify, make specific the fact that there will be no $3 per megawatt hour until three years after the first new plant or new farm is built, and we instead couch this question around reality that we this fund will be fed, this impact assistance fund will be fed from existing wind plants that pay their taxes to us, and in view of the language in the bill that says that the tax is not going to be $3 for these existing firms, but it's going to be 25 cents a megawatt hour for 2016, I think, and then after 2016 it's 50 cents. And you know, I may be wrong in my calculations, but at these tax rates, I think it's going to take probably no less than 15 years and as much as 20 years for these existing plants to have paid us enough generation tax to get up to $15 million if we take a worst-case basis and there is no there's no $3 farms that come on to online in that interim. Am I wrong on that arithmetic or not?
Representative Stubson.
Mr. Chairman, to answer the question from the good representative, well, remember that new, just to make clear, new producers pay day one. They start producing, they pay day one. But, yeah, assuming there is delay, there would be a significant, I mean, assume we only have incumbent producers, there would be significant delay in filling up that pot. But the other part of that analysis is there's no impacts. There's nobody drawing on the impact assistance fund, and there's no need for it until and unless you get new producers. And so as those new producers come online, this fills up faster and faster and faster. And so as the impacts expand, there's more and more available more readily to answer those impacts.
Representative Goggles.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I do have a couple of questions. I was one of the high votes to bring it out of committee. It was a 5-3 vote. My consideration was that I went at the floor to hear this bill and talk about the impaction assistance that we were talking about. In terms of the $15 million in the impact assistance to counties, it appears to me that, and there's a question here, Mr. Chair. It appears to me that the impaction is now. It's immediate. We have impactions from previous development that have not been addressed. So would it not seem that we would want to, you know, like you've mentioned, front end that impaction up to $15 million now rather than wait on the structure itself to catch up and produce that $15 million?
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, that does make sense, and that's what I would intend to do if this moves towards second reading. But to focus more specifically on the issue of impacts of past wind developers, I mean, that's not at issue, and there wouldn't be any impact assistance for those because, remember, impact assistance under the Industrial Siting Council is dependent upon, you look at an increase in sales tax in the area impacted. And because there's been no sales tax on this, there's been, under the current law, no ability to access impact assistance. But, yeah, I think that is a move that would substantially strengthen this bill and one that I would support on second reading.
Chairman Sumlich.
Just one final point. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With respect to the Standing Committee Amendment and the $15 million for impact assistance, if this bill moved forward, certainly there could be some proposals to ramp this fund up for impact assistance. We'd have to do that through what was contemplated, some kind of a loan or a general fund appropriation, which is just two different points with respect to that. One of the things we've heard all through this discussion is that local governments want this money up front, and it's just been a tradition when we do these types of projects or industrial type projects that qualify for the Industrial Siting Council is that money is available up front to mitigate those impacts that we have. So the way this is right now is if we come back and consider some kind of a backfill on this, that's what you're going to be faced with. You're going to be faced with the decision. We want to reach into our general fund and build this account up so that when that first new project goes into effect and local governments impact, that there will be money there. And, I guess that's a calculated risk to see if the body would be willing to do that, at that time.
Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question for the representative from District 1. The handout, was it based on the bill or on the amendment?
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's based upon the amendment. The if you saw what was based upon the bill, there'd be a big chunk going to the state and a little tiny stream going to the county. So this is based upon the Standing Committee amendment.
Question being called. All those in favor of the Standing Committee Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. The amendment is adopted. Division being called. All those in favor of the amendment, please stand up. The amendment passes. We are back on the bill. Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have some concerns about the concept of the bill. One is kind of the longer-term impacts of the tax, because one advantage to consumers of a property tax is, it's a one-time fee. It adds in the short term to the cost of the power, but once it's paid for, it's off. And if we're putting on a $3 tax, once the time has passed where the property tax, would have been paid off, that $3 tax is going to remain. It's going to keep prices higher for consumers. So that gives me a little bit of concern. A couple other bits of concern that I have in general related to wind is just the true viability of it. Right now, this wind development is happening because the federal government is subsidizing it at over $23 per megawatt hour produced whatever the term is, but they're subsidizing at a rate that if it were left up to the free market, it wouldn't be happening because it's just not economically viable on its own. And I have concerns about jumping in bed with an industry that might not be viable in the long term once all those benefits and subsidies go away. I also have some concern because, frankly, I don't think I don't think it makes these wind generating plants or towers make our state more beautiful. If anything, I think they have the opposite effect. And to use a an analogy that was used earlier, we could cover every square inch of our state with broccoli, and it would not produce near the power that one new apple would. So I think we'd be a lot better off building one new apple in the form of one new nuclear power plant producing more power than the entire square inch covered with wind generators. And I just have doubts about the whole concept of trying to fill up our state with broccoli.
Representative Pedersen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In light of some of the comments from the previous speaker, I'd like to take this time to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. I'd like to discuss a couple of things about this bill, what I'm doing with this Committee of the Whole Amendment, and what the end-all goal is. One is that this bill most likely represents a probably more fair and equitable tax than what we currently have in the system, and that's important. That if we make a policy decision that we're going to tax something, then you should probably make the tax as fair and equitable as it can. And I hearken back to when we moved from the ad valorem to the weight-based measure on what you would put into a cuspidor. When we did that, you did net increase a couple $100,000 to the state, but it's a fair look at it. What I look at is this is probably a more fair way of taxing this industry going forward, but what I wanted to address, and you can see what I'm doing here, and I'll kind of talk about the repercussions and where it comes from, is beginning on page 2, line 15, I'm going to reinsert the stricken language with this back to $1 and delete 3. And then on page 2, line 16, deleting the new language. Page 3, line 13, what essentially happens is you are eliminating by function of page 3, line 13 and page 3, line 15, removing Romanet 5. So it never reaches $3 in its total taxation. It caps off at $1 and maintains that level going forward. And so new generation would have $1, and then current would only ramp itself up from 25, 50, 75 to $1, and then never move up to 3. I want you to know that this did not come from industry. They remained neutral. They had no comment on it. This is just me talking about that we're making a choice as a body, and I think that we need to discuss it. By voting for the bill going forward, you will net increase $5 million per project over the lifetime of it in total taxation. Companies don't absorb excess taxation because they're good charities. They will pass that on to the consumer and pass it on to all of our Wyoming constituents and families. And so by voting for my amendment, it's also important that you know that my amendment actually represents a net tax decrease over that period of time. And that's a question. And so I bring this forward saying that I don't think we need more tax money, and we probably need to tax people less because I think people are better stewards of their money than the government. And so I leave this capped at $1. I'd like to put it out for people to talk about. I won't belabor this with series of speeches, but I think it's a good thing for the body to consider, and I hope that you vote for the amendment.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I find this discussion really interesting. I can't remember whether it was last year or the year before we were having the discussion about $3 to start with, but we were going to do this. We backed off and said, okay, for a period starting in 3 years, we're going to start with $1, and then we're going to look at it and see what it is to replace some of the revenues we'll lose because of the electrical generation. And now all of a sudden we've got an amendment here that's going to fix this at $1, and we've got a proposal that will go to $3, but we'll do some other things and may draw it out over the long run. And I'm just sitting here finding this discussion really amusing, because we're saying we're going to make policy decisions and we're going to do all these things. I thought had made a policy decision, And we were going to come back and revisit that in a few years. But apparently now we're going to do something different. And I'm going to listen very closely to the rest of what we talk about the rest of the morning.
Representative Vronish.
Okay, I'm sorry. I guess the light blinked and I thought it was on. I'm going to speak against this amendment. And the reason is this last legislature set the tax on wind at $1. And it seemed to me that some people may have grumbled, but that's a policy this last legislature made. Now, they come back and they said that for new construction coming on, that they would like to have, you know, some benefits here and there, and they're willing to accept $3. And what this bill currently does is it takes that $1 that was set by the last legislature, converts it to 25 cents for 5 years starting in January 2012, then it goes to 50 cents for the next 5 years, and then it goes to 75 cents for 5 years, and then it goes to $1 for 5 years, and then it goes to $3. And the industry receives quite a bit of benefits on that, and supposedly it was to get more money to the counties. Now we're going to dilute the $3 thing, and just we're still going to do at the low tax rate of 25 cents that was, you know, that was part of this deal. And I think we're just giving away way too much. We got an agreement on what this thing was with the body of 191, and I hate to dilute it. And so I'm speaking against the amendment. Thank you.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the proposed amendment, my understanding of the interim work that was done by the Revenue Committee, among other responsibilities, was to see what kind of a basis they could put wind generation on that said they paid their fair share of the revenues to the state that were not being paid prior to their work this summer. And I think when they worked their way through that, it came very close to the Committee of the Whole amendment and the bill you have in front of us. And I think that was an equity issue, because a lot of people know that much of the revenue comes from other energy sources in the state, and this was a new one that had lots of subsidies and not the same balance of tax contributions to the good of the state. The amendment that takes it back to $1, I think misses the mark of the work that was done through the interim committee and their proposal through the amendment of the whole, which did pass, of a ramp up. And I think what's missed by some of the people as they read this is that ramp up starts for those projects that were not paying any of this tax before, and they will start in 2012. So I urge your defeat of the proposed amendment and support of the bill.
Representative Kasparik.
Neither for or against the bill, but I have a question either for the sponsor of the bill or the bringer of the amendments. How does this compare to how we tax our other mineral industries?
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for my first time on this bill, but, of course, the first time on this amendment. Everybody needs to take a good look at this and understand what this does and what this does for what we're going to do for local governments this year. Of course, I'm against this amendment in case this bill gets away from us, because this will just devastate our local governments and their ability to react and mitigate the impacts from this emerging industry. But, ladies and gentlemen, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, no, these are kind words from my colleague that brought this amendment. If you want to kill this bill, go ahead and vote for this amendment, because I guarantee it, this will just quite frankly give those of us at the point of the spear leading the charge against this bill, plenty to poke holes with. So, again, standing against this amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Goggles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for my first time on this particular amendment and speaking in opposition to this amendment. If you're serious about this amendment and want to put the $1 back instead of $3, then, yeah, just kill the bill and leave it as is because it's currently $1.
Representative Blickery.
Mr. Chairman and fellow representatives, another representative asked a question of how this taxation policy compares to those of the minerals, and my suggestion would be to ask the county commissioners in the counties that have minerals.
Question being called. Chairman Berger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hate to be the last word on this amendment, but on and against it. You know, we heard earlier that there will probably be an amendment come to front-end this to work on impact counties, distributions to help them with this industry. We've also had discussion from many individuals around the state that have this impact with roads and other issues in their communities. How do you plan to support those communities financially if we somehow do not have a tax structure in place? Thank you.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one last comment on the amendment. I would urge you to vote against it. The $3 was the product of a lot of work, both by the folks downstairs and the Revenue Committee and others who developed a model, who examined the costs, who looked at competitiveness, who said what is fair, what can industry bear, and what gets the best benefit for the state. And so I think the bill as it stands is fair, and I would urge you to reject the amendment.
Question being called. All those in favor of the committee of whole amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment fails. Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. Sorry. Sherman Semlick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the risk of running into our lunch hour, you know, this is an important issue, and we've worked on it for 2 years. We have no less than 10 bills, I think, that come through the Joint Revenue Committee. All had a fair and balanced debate with all the stakeholders involved, and When we come down to the final analysis, we have the placeholder of the dollar per megawatt hour and the exemption of the sales tax that will go off on 2011. But let me remind you, any new development that occurs after 2011, they don't start their taxation on that until 3 years after the beginning of their operation. So they still have a period of time after the beginning of development to help recapture some of the costs they have up front for paying the sales tax on the equipment. So I think that's fair. With respect to the issue about the incumbent wind developers, they haven't paid the tax up to this point. So we have this graduated discount over a period of years to say we need to be mindful of imposing a tax because of their PPAs, I think, power agreements. They can't build those rate costs into those power agreements because they're already in place. Well, they haven't had to pay the tax up to this point. Now, I'm not one to stand before you ever and insist that we have a taxation system that's unfair. I've always supported low tax on this industry, but also support a stable tax. My concern about the long-term discount on this is we go out, we collect a small amount of that tax for the first few years. You get out 10 or 15 years, there's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of uncertainty in this industry, and there's a lot of uncertainty in the tax policy. So we're going to collect a very little amount for a long time, and at the very end, we're going to go back to that $3. So you know, in terms of a stable tax policy, what we really have in place would appear to me to be a fair, reasonable, and stable tax policy, not only for the industry, but for the state who would want to encourage. The last point is we spent a lot of time this summer looking at the lowest cost of energy production through the study that was done that's been referred to. And Wyoming, with the present placeholder tax policy, remains very competitive. Now, there's been some pushback from some people saying that the numbers were flawed. The numbers outside of Wyoming were flawed in terms of the capacity that we have to generate wind. So those numbers aren't right. Well, I would submit to you that if the numbers aren't right in the regional areas that we compared with, the numbers probably aren't right in Wyoming, too. So it's a wash. It's you just can't pick out and criticize the capacity factors that were used in this analysis, which makes Wyoming very competitive in this whole area of taxation on wind generation. So I guess I just ask a little bit of caution in moving forward with this bill. I think we have a stable tax policy in place with the placeholder that we have. It's fair for the industry. I believe it's fair for the state. And there's no question about what's going to happen 5 or 10 years down the road when we're really interested in collecting that tax because of that discounted rate. Are the developments still going to be there at that time? I can't say for certain that it is, but I can tell you that the local governments who've been at the stakeholder in this issue all along they said we want that money up front. We want that money up front. The present tax policy we have as a placeholder puts that money up front, and I think the industry is protected because of the 3-year moratorium on the tax. And I would just ask a little bit of caution about moving forward with this bill.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm kind of like the representative just in front of me. I find the conversation terribly interesting, as fascinating as it can be. One of the fascinating parts to it is why are we so anxious to develop the one industry, and that's because it's green. The fact that it is green is based on flawed, in my mind, scientific data and how we as politicians interpret and use and respond to that data. I happen to be one of those guys that most of you know that I probably would be empathetic to having alternate fuels, whether they're responding correctly or whether they're not, but to have a balanced production of electric energy for our nation and our state being a very large contributor to it. So to have a tax advantage for the development of that industry doesn't burn my heart. On the other hand, we had one comment relative to a nuclear plant. And why wouldn't that be a better alternative? Well, one of the reasons is because of we as in the political world have made it almost impossible to do that in a responsive period of time. Probably takes someplace in the neighborhood of 20, maybe even 30 years to get it permitted, built, and up and running. On the other hand, we have the one natural resource that everybody seems to frown at. That's a very large one. That's coal. And we are trying to clean that coal up so that that would meet the green issue. But if we're going to try to develop and get a balance of energy production, I don't think we ought to forget natural gas. There's one of the four that we could possibly encourage to its development. The plant can be located in a reasonable place. It's not unsightly. It's green. And it can be put close to transmission lines so we can avoid the eminent domain issue that is so frequently brought up with this development. So it seems to me that maybe instead of having a bill that is just for wind energy, that we might make a consideration of having some kind of an allowance, some kind of encouragement to the development of alternate energy sources as well as wind. With that, so.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me begin with my little
introductory speech here with these words, the resounding words, let me be clear. This bill, we need to dispatch of this bill today. We've heard some comments. Keep this bill alive. Let's work on it second reading, maybe third reading. Ladies and gentlemen, let me be clear. And I'll say this again. There are no cracks in this foundation. There are many links missing in the chain of information and data necessary for you to make this important decision on significant tax policy. As has been said in the great history of this in the last year on our interim committee work, how they were unable to reach some consensus on this. And another revenue committee member mentioned this as well. And it's incumbent on us to be able to make good tax policy decisions on good, sound data. I would maintain we don't have that information in front of us today. And even the sponsor of the bill has mentioned how this is a dynamic work in progress. And I appreciate his efforts to bring this forward. He's put a lot of time in this. But we can make the rest of the session a lot easier for the sponsor of this bill if we dispatch this right now. One only needs to look at the back page of the bill. Ladies and gentlemen, the fiscal note, I'm just going to read it to you. The fiscal or personal impact is not determinable due to insufficient time to complete the fiscal note process. The alarms should be sounding. Danger, danger, danger. If our great staff has not had time to prepare the spreadsheets necessary for us to look at this and make good, sound fiscal policy decisions. One of the points brought up, the sponsor of the bill, the intention of this significant change in tax policy is to flatten out the tax, to do away with the spike that has to be paid up front. Ladies and gentlemen, our local governments, our local communities depend on that spike so they can deal with the impacts from this industry. And I can tell you the impacts are measurable. And ladies and gentlemen, they are significant. And of course, the county where I come from, we are looking at plans on the table. And believe me, the plans for this one large project is probably one of the projects that we're going to see happen in this state. And the numbers that have been on the table since the birth of this project, 1,000 turbines. None of us really know what this is going to look like, but 1,000 turbines, it's significant. They have the company that's proposing this project has done a wonderful job in selling this project to the community that I live in by showing us a wonderful PowerPoint on the increases in our tax base due to this project being developed. The numbers are staggering. And ladies and gentlemen, I was unable to bring these numbers today because the short amount of time for me to react. But I can tell you in the tune of millions and millions of dollars for our local communities. We just can't take that money away from them when they need that. Again, that spike, I think we all recognize how we've set up our Industrial Siting Act and the Impact Assistance Fund is to deal with these things and to flatten that out. Not only sends a bad message to our local communities, but also leads a lot of the members of my community to ask the question, does this industry want to be a good neighbor or not? Now, good. Again, I was reviewing some of the good information that I try and keep close at hand about tax policy. The one thing I like to ring true is this transparent? Is it easy to understand? And I would maintain very few of us right now understand what is in front of us today and the impacts of it. And with that, I would listen to the rest of the discussion. And believe me, I learned a long time ago lunch is highly overrated. So let's work this thing out till it's done.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to answer a couple questions before. Too far on me. First, with a couple of the points from the last speaker, there's not vague information. There's not huge question marks out there because we were able to work through the interim and analyze this in detail through modeling of what we're talking about. And actually, it's interesting. I found it comforting that as we sat down with LSO numbers on projections, with counties numbers on projections, with industries numbers on projections, there wasn't any discussion or argument about what the impact of this bill was and what the dollar figures were. I mean, because we have some certainty on what it's going to do, and what it's going to do is increase the revenue to the state and the counties by a little amount over the period of time that we're talking about, but it is a rough approximation of the tax burden that we have in place. And that's going back to an issue that Wyoming, the modeling showed Wyoming as being so competitive. The one problem was they were looking at amount, not structure. And what this does is it leaves the amount in place that, yes, we can be competitive, but it deals with the structure. There was a comment that tying ourselves to an industry whose viability may be in question. And just remember, I mean, the thing that is paying the tax are those turbines that are spinning. The uncertainty in this industry is getting the turbines up because it's so capital intensive up front. Once you have the infrastructure in place, the turbines built and they're spinning, and we have our unending fuel of wind, I guess, you know, then you're just sort of, that is when the money flow is at its highest, and that's when you're not going to see these things just disappear. It's in the front end before they make that capital investment. When and if they do disappear, we passed legislation last year to make sure that they're taken down. But as far as tying the tax burden to those, I think this is what makes the most sense. And finally, impact on consumers. There was a discussion about how does this impact consumers. And I'll tell you, this bill is better for your consumers than the tax that's in place right now. And why is that? Because we know that when a utility builds these facilities, they are able to roll all their costs in to the rate structure. And that includes the financing costs of these facilities. And so you have a tax structure that ramps up, our current tax structure, that ramps up and creates a higher finance cost for their projects, something in the order of two times what the tax burden is. That gets rolled into the rate base. That gets rolled into what your folks are paying for power. If you adopt this tax, and if you flatten that out over time, and if you save them that carrying costs of this upfront tax burden, that does not get rolled into the power rates, and you save your constituents, the customers of power companies in Wyoming, money. So this bill is better for consumers than the existing tax structure, and that's one of the many reasons to support it.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the things that should occur to us, ladies and gentlemen, is we're going to have to vote on this, and I sense that there's a lot of people who like to vote on it sooner rather than later because of the time of the day. But what we really would have needed, I think, to make an intelligent vote on it, this would be to, if you see that flow chart that they gave of the flow of revenues that come out of the megawatt hour of generation capacity. All right, that kind of gives you some kind of a anecdotal idea of where this money goes. But what we need to have right beside it is a flow chart of the existing law. You know, it was mentioned earlier that, you know, we really have some pressure to get this done this year because our law or our tax changes, the policy changes in a year from now or 10 months from now. But, you know, I want to point out that we have a policy already on the books, and in the Revenue Committee this year we studied that, and we had a consultant hired that came in, and I think his bill was in the six figures, and he, you know, these people really knew what they were doing as far as I could tell, and their conclusion was that we're already competitive with other states, we're already very competitive. But getting back to the flow chart, if we looked at the way, it would behave for the generation tax. The impact assistance block over there, that rectangle would be gone. And the generation tax of $3 per megawatt hour of $15 million would flow right into this, what says state and local share. And if I remember right, I don't have our current law right here at the podium, but it seemed like we had it set up where local governments got 60% and the state got 40% of that split. All right, so that's one of the flow charts that we would have if, you know, we could make a direct comparison of this policy compared to the existing policy that's already in statute. Now, the other one you need is the initial sales tax on the equipment purchased and the cost of building it. And in that case, that's where the impact assistance comes about. The impact assistance is paid out of the state share for the 4% sales tax. You also have state and, or I should say local, 5% tax and the optional 6%. That would have been in there. And you could see what the difference is, and you may be able to see why these local governments have a real issue with this new proposal. I mean, they had a thing they thought they could live with a year ago when we passed this previous law. And I guess the other thing that maybe we need to discuss before we go to lunch is maybe, I guess, the philosophical concern that you might have is, in a way, we can look at ourselves with this new law as being somewhat of a venture capitalist, you know. And, you know, we say, what's a venture capitalist? Why do I say that? Well, a venture capitalist shares in the risk by definition. You know, there, you can go to the yellow pages in big towns and find venture capitalists there, and their deal is to share in risk and therefore help new businesses, new industries get started. And when I say sharing in the risk, what is the risk that we face? You know, the one we've talked about is this impact assistance fund and the fact that there's no self-generating way of that fund building up until we get new plants, and we're going to have impacts before we have it built up, which means we've got to go borrow it, or we have to go borrow it from another savings account that we have, or borrow it from or appropriate it from the general fund. So, you know, being a business partner, a venture partner in this, we have some money at risk vis-a-vis the impact assistance. The other risk is that if you look at that, how we break even if you look at, I think it's a 20-year time horizon. So we have the risk of whether this business or this industry will be operating 20 years from now. You know, if we come up with the hypothetical possibility that the federal government may realize or decide that, you know, the hype with this wind energy is not as good as it is for in the real world, you know, they may the favor may fall away from it. And, you know, if they do that, they might also realize that they may not be able to afford this. In other words, the federal government may run out of money one of these years, and they might just, by one way or another, have to resort to the fact that they can't provide these subsidies. And believe me, folks, without those federal tax and depreciation subsidies, wind would shut down in immediately. Now, what does that mean for a venture partner in this? It means that the last 10 years, when we're trying to recoup the sales tax that we forgave, we're just out there. I mean, if they close up, it's like getting blood out of a turnip. And that's just something to think about. Again, if this gets on second reading, I'd sure like to see some kind of a flow chart of our existing law, two flow charts of our existing law that both cover the megawatt per hour distributions to local governments, as well as the sales tax, including the city or county and optional sales taxes. So I'd urge caution, like many of you have. Thank you.
Representative Davison.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against this bill, I urge you to vote no, because our local governments have been trying to get on board with this thing, and they don't feel comfortable with this bill at all. It doesn't do what they think it should. And I just hope that we're not going to be like the body on the East Coast and pass a bill we really don't know what's in it. We already have heard from the sponsor that it's going to take some tweaking. If we need to still tweak this bill, maybe we should set it back and look at it better later. We know what we have under the current status, and we don't know what we're going to get. So I urge you to vote no on this bill and until we get more work done on it. Thank you.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm speaking on and for the bill. Heard a lot of discussion today about a lot of things, and really what this boils down to, it's really a referendum. We're at a crossroads right here. And the crossroads is, do we really seriously want to develop and assist with wind power in the state of Wyoming? Or do we want to shut the door on this industry and watch it go someplace else? Now, the bill has some problems. We can work those out. But overall, there's a lot of hard work that's gone into this. It is the best thing that we can bring forward right now. And I would really want you to consider what your vote is going to do here. It is going to send a message to an entire industry, whether we want them, welcome them in our state. It's also going to send a message to the municipalities that we are trying to work out the tax structure that does not harm them in the long run. This bill is an attempt at that, and I think it's a right start for it, and so we need to vote it up. Thank you.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple questions. I've been wandering around asking my days on revenue. It seemed like these federal production credits and depreciation credits were spread over 6 years, and it seemed like these producers, and this is working off memory, which isn't very long memory, but it seemed like it was 106% of the investment or something I have in my head. But I was curious if somebody has some information on that. And then what's happened to other wind projects around the country when those production credits have run out and the depreciation credits have run out? And I understand they get renewed. There's an argument in Washington, D.C. about it. But is there anybody else we can judge from that's had these issues that maybe shut down wind farms? And so I guess I'm a little nervous about pushing this out that far. What we have now is a pretty good split. The locals get the money, and it's pretty predictable. So against the bill, and I guess I'd like those questions answered.
Chairman Childers, Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, there was a question asked, what do we get from some of the other resources? Coal, say $7 a ton coal. We collect a 7% severance tax. That'd be like 40 cents, 49 cents a ton. Approximately 70 cents, or well, actually more than 70 cents. We also charge it at 100% of the value at the mouth of the mine, or that we collect property tax on, which adds another 70 cents, probably more than that. So it's $1.19. Then there's mineral royalties on that, which is, I believe they're like 15%, and we get half of that back. So there's some more money. So for every ton of coal, we're looking at $1.50 or more, or a lot more than that. We're looking at least $2. Severance tax on gas and oil is at 6%. So that's a lot. But there's one thing that's been said here that bothers me, and it's bothered me ever since we started talking about wind. We build these wind generators, and then when the wind doesn't blow, these plants, our big plants, have to be sitting there on idle when the wind is blowing and to provide the power when it's needed in the line, which drives up the cost of the electricity at those plants when they're sitting there idling. So this idea of where it's more economically better for our consumers to have this wind power is not true. Because it's going to drive the plants up, the cost of the plants at these big plants right now up to us. And I've heard all kinds of figures, so I don't even try and quote any of them. But that's what happens. They have to sit on idle because they have to, when the peak hits, they got to be there to provide it. So I believe I'm on and against the bill.
Chairman Shoulders.
Well, Mr. Chairman, on and for the bill. And quite frankly, the argument just made, you think about the power plants that are going to have to take care of that period of time that the wind doesn't blow. And I'm sure it's when the session isn't in place. So, but the thing about it, it's going to happen. These wind power units are going to be somewhere on the grid and possibly out of this state if we don't pass it. You're going to pay that cost anyway. In other words, when the wind doesn't blow and the plants have to pick it up, it's part of the grid. And it also, the other part is the Public Service Commission. In other words, they try to average those costs. The electricity issue is not a local issue. It's a nationwide issue. You've got to remember that. And if we don't do it here, those wind power units are going to be other places. The big thing that people need to remember in wind power plants, huge investment. And in any project, you got a payout to take care of. So if we can delay that investment, still get some revenue coming in, and then even get a lot more later, it's good for us. And it's good for them because it brings an attraction to bring them in. It's a competitive business. That's the way it's going to be. And as far as the impact fund, the people that are bringing this bill, there's going to be an amendment to take care of that impact fund, or the good chairman of revenue will make sure that there'll be an amendment to take care of it. We aren't going to sell the county short. It's an agreement in there that we're going to take care of the local government. That's going to happen. The ramping up of the taxation makes sense. Taking away the sales tax makes sense. We had a manufacturing sales tax exemption. You got to remember why we did it. The reason we did it is because it's the huge investment that they make. And to allow them to get the investment and give us a return later, we remove the sales tax, and in this case, we also reduce the tax for a while. It's a business decision. We formed the business council a number of years to do things like this, and they've been doing things like this. We as a legislature have been trying to take care of some of these same things to be able to bring in the businesses. The layout of this whole thing, this whole bill, is something that I worked, is the same thing that of things that I worked with 30 and 40 years ago in trying to figure out how do you get a project to sound right that you can make some money in the future. If you can get some delays in your investments and then make money later, it makes sense. So it makes sense for them to come in. We're going to attract them instead of this other state. We're still going to make money. The bill's developed that we're going to make money for the state to be able to take care of the local impacts and the other impacts that typically happen with any type project. So on and for the bill.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have to respond to a point that's been made by a couple of previous speakers. Again, we just can't, when somebody says we don't pass this tax policy, well, everybody's just going to pack up and leave. Just couldn't be further from the truth. Now, I'm just going to tell you a little story about where I come from here. You all know where I come from, and I mentioned this before. There's a project being planned, 1,000 turbines, and I talk to these people frequently, and I've emphasized to them the importance of a good public policy or public outreach to reach out to the community and the local governments about what they're doing, the impacts, and the importance of them being a good neighbor, and they get it. And they somewhat resisted our production tax, sales tax, but they penciled this thing out, and their bottom line is still good. They've got a solid company that's going to proceed, and they're going to start producing electricity very soon, not 5 years out. This thing is imminent, and they want to be a good neighbor. And I would maintain that other companies can recognize the benefits of responding to our community's needs and sticking with the plan that we have right now. So just kind of settle down. Nobody's moving out of Wyoming. We just have flat the best wind on the planet. So they're going to be here. Thank you.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would only say this. I think it's important that we move this bill forward, so I urge your support of it. In the energy sector, there needs to be balance, and renewables are a part of that. And the other hydrocarbons that we have in the state are a big part of it in our state. And I think this is our best shot at getting that balance looked at as we go forward. So I'd urge your support of this bill.
Chairman Childers.
The comment about the companies moving out, this is a policy to be set up for now and in the future. We need to also attract companies. That's why the policy. I'm not saying a company's going to move out because of this, but what I am saying is to be able to attract those businesses to move into the state. That's why we're developing a policy like this.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really like this bill because I thought we were being proactive by presenting this and allowing industry to have a stability in knowing how they could develop their companies. And at the same time, the citizens of Wyoming would also know that there was a benefit in it for them. And I think it's a win-win situation, ladies and gentlemen, and I'd ask for you to move it forward.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two real brief comments. First of all, on the treatment of local communities, look on your chart one more time with me, just one more time. Indulge me, please, because this bill does not jilt local governments. You have 20% going to impact assistance. Where does that money go to? Local governments. The other distribution, the other 80%, 30% of that goes to where? Local governments. Another 1% goes to where? Local governments. For the first 2 years, the 69% that would otherwise go to the general fund, where does it go? Local governments. This is not a bill that victimizes local governments. We can fix it, we can tweak it, we can make it more to their liking, but that representation is just not true. Remember, again, travel back with me last year. We sat on this floor. We passed the tax. Everybody acknowledged on the floor that we didn't have the information to know with what we were doing was right or not. In fact, a good former chairman of revenue came and appeared in committee on this bill and said that thing. We have learned a lot this year. This bill is the product of that education. It makes sense, and I'd urge your vote aye.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Sumlich's motion that the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so at the recommendation that Bill number 191 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Chair is in doubt. All those in favor of the motion, please stand up. Those opposed, please stand. House Bill 191 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank heavens we weren't taxing the wind that was used to debate that last bill. With that, I move that the Committee of the Whole begs leave to rise and sit again at 2:15 p.m.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Okay. The motion is passed. Any committee announcements? Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee member 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet Monday morning at 8 o'clock, room H18, to hear Senate File 116, Engrossed Oil and Gas Enhanced Recovery Microbial Conversion, and Senate Joint Resolution 6, Resolution Environmental Protection Agency Regulation.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 4, Education, will meet immediately upon noon recess in 302 for consideration House Bill 241, House Bill 251, and House Bill 212.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 6, Travel, will meet 8 o'clock Monday morning in room 810, where we will take up Senate File 33, State Parks Acquisition of Lands, and Senate File 41, Engrossed Film Industry Financial Incentives Program.
Chairman Childers.
Mr. Chairman, your committee number 3, Revenue, will meet in room H11 at 8 a.m. on Monday to consider the following bill: Senate File 108, Remote Electronic Terminals Fees, and Senate File 121, Property Tax Exemption for Nonprofit Museum.
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, your Judiciary Committee number 1 will meet Monday, February the 7th at 6:58. A.M. to discuss the following bills: Senate File 15, Court Jurisdiction; Senate File 22, Wind Energy Property Rights; Senate File 67, Guardianship and Ward Sealed Records; Senate File 68, Summary Probate Amendments; and Senate File 88, Expungement of Nonviolent Felonies.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, we'll meet as soon as the committee members can get up to the room in H17 to hear one small bill, 184. Then we'll have the rest of the lunch hour off.
The Committee of the Whole will sit again at 2:15.